And welcome to the 51st episode of Future Library. We're into our second half century, I guess. So maybe, now it depends on what I've decided to do, listeners. You may have noticed at the beginning of the show a different theme tune, or it may be exactly the same. It depends on how I've decided to approach this episode, because I am wanting to do a new theme tune, because I figure that around the half century is a good place to do it, but it depends on whether I have done it or not. So you've either heard the little boop, 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 boop noise, or you've heard something completely new. Who knows? It's a mystery. I don't even know. And as I'm saying it, part of me is going, you know what, I'm going to be lazy and just use the old theme tune. So it's probably going to be the old theme tune you've heard, but it's a mystery. We'll let it kind of be answered by when the show goes up. My guest today, obviously I'm your host, Alex Botton, as always. I always assume that you all know that, but I never really say, but then it is at the end, so again, it doesn't matter. My guest today is an artist and a musician. I was trying to think before the call started how I first came across his work, and I think it may have been somebody else talking about something and seeing his Twitter username and thinking that the Twitter username looked cool, and following him on Twitter and then going and having a look at his website and kind of getting involved in looking at all the art and stuff, and so here we are, all the way from, I believe, Liverpool, Mr. Sean Wars. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm not too bad, so.
I'm not bad at all. I've had a day off work. Wednesday is my day off in the middle of the week, and which I pay for with longer days for the other days of the week. And I can hear a cat outside shouting, but she's just going to have to wait out there. But today I've kind of stayed in bed all day because I was feeling a bit down in the dumps. And I'll tell you why I was feeling a bit down in the dumps. At work, I usually get to sit and just listen to music because I do kind of quite a lot of data entry. And then at the end of the data entry, I ring people and check that the data entry was correct. And then I do some more data entry. But yesterday, our manager at the office has decreed that we can no longer listen to music on our headphones. So, you know, I sit there in this team made up of mostly women who are, you know, mid to late 40s, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it is like being trapped in an eternal episode of Loose Women. And so I stick my headphones in and just listen to music all day, and now I've been told I can't do that, and I'm actually quite glum about it, I have to say.
I work in... It's basically like the Match of the Day studio with just men talking about football all day, every day.
You see, I would want to kill myself in that situation.
You kind of just get used to it, mm-hmm. being the odd one out.
Do you find that it causes awkward questions when you're asked, what kind of music do you like? And it's kind of weird, because for me, when I was in my early 20s, if people asked me that, I'd go, excellent, I get to show off my excellent taste in music. But now I just dread being asked because of the blank looks.
Yeah, I know exactly that. Although the boss did tell the new apprentice that I got that I was street jazz, which I really didn't understand any basis for, given anything I do actually do.
So they told you that you did... They told the new apprentice that you did street jazz?
Yes.
You should set up a project now.
Which shows... Well, I was going to call the next solo, the Spirit Animals record, street jazz after that.
Do it.
But, yeah, finding out exactly what street jazz is going to be the hard bit.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever come across street jazz. I mean, I've come across... Actually, maybe I have, because I was once in... Parma in Mallorca, and there was a guy badly playing the beginning of the sax solo to it was a George Michael song. I can't remember what the song's called. You know, it's got the sax solo that goes do 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 do.
Yeah, yeah, it's on the tip of my tongue.
I can't think what it's called.
Careless Whisper.
Careless Whisper. Yeah.
Show me George Michael credit.
Yeah, he was playing the beginning of the sax solo to Careless Whisper over and over again, and just walking from bar to bar. And it's like he didn't know the rest of it.
Oh, that's not bad. I reckon I could learn one bar or something on saxophone.
Yeah. That's street jazz. So, we should find a bit out about you, Sean. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Is that not a bit deep?
Is that what?
It's a very deep question, that, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you can choose the bullet point version if you like. I mean, I'm not asking you to say metaphysically who you are.
Yeah. I've always lived in Liverpool since I was born. And I do pictures and attempt sometimes okay, sometimes terrible bands.
And I have a list of them here. Because your website, which I really like your website, which I will put a link to at the end. And I have to say, listeners, Sean is the, in terms of guests, he is fantastic in so much that he's got a website that has all of his information linked from it, which so many others, you have to like link to about 15 websites to get the full picture. Sean has a website that he has carefully linked everything from, and it's very good. It's warsdraws.com. .co.uk. So it's a www.rrsdddrrwss.co.uk. There will be a link underneath where you download the podcast from. It's got everything on it. I mean, it's got all your bands listed.
I don't think it's up to date.
Are there more?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what's listed there. It's been a while since I've looked at the website, you know.
So I'll tell you what you've got.
In fact, it's definitely out today because the newest, stupidest band name is not.
And what is the newest, stupidest band name?
EBEORIETEMETHHPITI.
You lost me at about the second letter. How would you pronounce that?
You can't. That was vaguely the point. To be annoying before you even were in a room with us.
And what kind of music does that band do?
It was
street jazz.
Yeah, let's just answer it with street jazz. Yeah. Noise rocky nonsense. It came from, it's the three members who were in Crucifix when Crucifix stopped. Well, not stopped, just changed into something else. And it was just an attempt to do that with the lad who was singing playing drums as well. But a bit better and more songs.
Well, I watched the Crucifix Live from Witness video earlier today, which is listeners linkable off the site. And it seemed to me kind of performance noise. What I particularly liked about watching the video was the bits when you could see the audience and a very kind of concerned looking girl with her fingers in her ears, which I thought said it all.
Yeah, apparently there was a young girl of about 7 crying in the toilets after that gig. Which, given the GT, the other lad in the band, was running around covered in fake blood with a balaclava on swinging a hammer, is quite unsurprising at a daytime gig at a like community arts venture.
Well, yeah, because I saw he in the video, he runs off out of a door at one point, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Disappears completely.
Yeah, I think he was just doing laps of the few people who were there.
Do you think that was the moment that set the 7-year-old girl off into...
I'm guessing so. There seemed to be a few mums and dads milling about who seemed very unimpressed.
You see, this is the thing. I mean, the question is what's going to happen with, you know... Because I'm finding... You know, I've got my eldest son turned 18 yesterday, which was a complete head fuck for me, because I'm 41 and I don't kind of think of myself as being any different to how I was when I was 18, and I'm still making ridiculous music and I'm still talking to people about things I think are important and funny and good, and still trying to get other people to listen to stuff, so I don't feel like I've changed at all. So I'm kind of wondering how those kind of shows are going to be once the generation after kids grow up. So like when my kids have got kids and they're going to things like that, they're going to be kind of used to that kind of thing because they've grown up with it from me. My kids don't think there's anything weird about what I do. And yeah. I've done noise shows and all sorts as well. And so I can wonder if there's going to be this whole generation of kids that, you know, will go along and be like, they'll stood at the front going, yeah, this, I know, I understand this, this is good. Instead of the one standing back going, oh, it's not like real music.
No, you really just hope that there's space for things to get equally as odd, but away from an already odd starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hopefully there's still miles to go with idiocy, like.
Yes.
It'll be a very sad day, like, when you realise that there's nothing stupid left to do.
And do you think that doing things with a kind of sense of allowing a sense of humour to creep into your work, or being kind of central to your work, is an important part of what you're doing?
Yeah, I just find it hard myself to take myself too seriously, given it's just not built into me, the idea of being like dead on and over serious about anything. There's lots I'm serious about, but like, art and music is a way to escape that tediousness of real life in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because you can almost kind of create your own reality with it and then immerse yourself into the kind of performance. And I think the thing I've always enjoyed about art and performance is that you kind of, for the time while it's going on, there's the, you're kind of telling the audience that this is what reality is and they've got to live with it. And, you know, this is happening now. Get over it and just enjoy the moment. But yeah, I think it's a positive thing. But I want to quickly look at the band you've been in. Because I spent some time, because other than the time I spent being asleep today, the rest of the time I spent, which will surprise listeners, actually doing some research. Normally, my research limits itself to a quick glance at a Wikipedia page, and then I kind of just hope that the conversation will, you know, do it for me, which usually works. But I also occasionally like to actually have a lot of things lined up. So I think for the second time ever, I have notes. So, you know, I think you should feel privileged, Sean.
Yeah, I do.
I've done that. I've actually got notes, and I'm not just making it up entirely as I go along. I mean, I am making it up mostly as I go along, but there's a small amount of structure. So I was going through that, and I was listening to Monobrow, a band which has an impressive cock T-shirt.
Yeah, there's still some of them left, if anyone wants
them. It's a fantastic shirt, I have to say.
Not a lot of people have got away with wearing it, but I have seen a few. Mostly on stages. I think it's a lot easier to wear as a musician on a stage than to walk around the street in.
Yeah, I think it's... Yeah, I can see it being borderline on the street, and there's always the slight risk that a policeman may say to you, you appear to have a T-shirt with a penis on it. But I think on stage, that would be... I may pick one up myself, actually, for performances. So we've got... Yeah, so I've written down here as my notes for that. Monobrow, clattering improv noise. Loads of drummers. I think you got up to five, didn't you?
I think we did eight.
Eight?
At one point. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was... Yeah, eight. Eight was the worst that it got to, but then there were quite a... All the other stuff got a bit much as well. Like, taking a double bass anyway is ridiculous and painful, and I still do it now, but just in a different band.
So was it yourself playing the double bass in that?
Oh, no, it was a friend, Paul, who also plays in about six of those bands we've got listed.
Yeah.
There's a very happy and willing scene of people who'll do stupid gigs with me in this city. Like, whatever the idea is, there seems to always be willing participants.
Well, that's something, actually, it's quite nice that you've touched on that, because I was up in Liverpool, when was it? A few months ago, to see Lucky Dragons at the Blue Coat. And the impression I got, and from talking to people like Simon Jones and various other folk that I know up there, was that it's a city that, whilst from the outside it just looks like it's like Beatles, 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 actually, in the city, there's a really, really supportive music scene that is does have audiences for the kind of weirder stuff. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's about right.
And it seems far better from where, I mean, where I am in Birmingham, or just outside, sort of between Birmingham and Wolverhampton. It's shit. You know, it's really difficult to get people to come along to odd shows.
You know, no, you're pretty safe that if you put something half decent on, you'll get 30, 40 people. Like, without too much bother, really.
If you publicise it, they will come.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not... Yeah, I think it's just because it's so small. There's not... It's, like, painfully small how Liverpool is, and you can't really notice it from the outside, but everybody knows everybody.
Would you say that's the... I mean, to me, that sounds like a very positive thing. It reminds me of my experience of living up in Scotland, that, you know, when you've got a much smaller music scene, by necessity, you get to know everybody who's in it. And everybody tends to be more supportive than being in this weird kind of competitive, oh, we've got to do better than them kind of thing.
Yeah, there's definitely parts of the scene that are more of that competitive and real, like, trying to... the fame idea of playing in a band, but it's very easy to live outside of that and just try and avoid, like, getting people coming down, reviewing your gigs to publicise themselves via you. I shouldn't really slide off people who write gig reviews, but I just don't like the selection that I use.
Yeah. Would you say then, what was I going to say about this? There's something that popped into my head. Shit, what was it? Maybe it's gone. Balls. It was something about... oh, right, that was it. Yeah, venues. Do you find that the venues is quite supportive as well? Because, I mean, I found that the problem I have is that I will put something on. And whereas when I was up in Dundee, the venues would then have me back over and over again. I found that a lot of venues in Birmingham, after two or three times, are just like, no, not again.
Liverpool just goes through phases where it'll have, like, a venue that would pretty much be the support of people of all this nonsense for so long. And then as that dies, someone else will have to take up the mantle of, like, providing that space that people can do any garbage in and they won't mind too much. And, yeah, there's a lot of... There's a lot of possibility of venues that are free or really cheap all the time, but it's always different people and it just goes in waves of going. There was just like scenes that followed around those venues.
And do you think the change in the licensing laws a couple of years ago made any difference? When I think they changed it so that if you had a venue of fewer than 150 people, you didn't need an entertainment license anymore. Has that had any noticeable effect? Weirdly, it doesn't seem to have had anything down here, but...
No, I don't think I've seen any of that. A lot of the places, I can't even say ever have happened. Events, licences, just like little backstreet art galleries and the back of a pizza shop appears to be the newest place where you can do anything. Maguire's. Where it's just like a pizza and a shop and bar at the front, and there's a back room that's essentially just a black box that you can do whatever you want in.
You see, that's what you need. It's because I really want to get back in. I've kind of found it so difficult to perform in Birmingham that I kind of almost lost the drive to do it. And part of that is not being able to find sympathetic venues, because I used to like living in Scotland because the Scottish scene is so used to just putting on anything. It's just like, it got to the point when I was living up in Dundee that I could ring up the venue I used the most and say, oh, can I book a gig? And they wouldn't even ask me who I was putting on. They'd just say, yeah, I'll put it in the diary. I'd be like, okay, great. And that was good. But like in Birmingham, Wolverhampton, it's so difficult. And also it's very big. Where I am, everything's spread out and it's all shit.
See, Birmingham from the outside, because of things like Supersonic, seemed like they'd be really like great and supportive and there'd be a lot going on there. But well, I suppose unless you're inside something, you don't really see it properly.
The problem Birmingham's always had is that big-name touring acts will get an audience. So something that Supersonic puts on, they'll put it on, you know, say at the Hare and Hounds in King's Heath or at the Custard Factory in the centre of the city. They'll put something on and it will be quite a big name. They'll pick from a kind of fairly, you know, a not too small pool of local bands that they like. They'll put those on as well. And a lot of people will go. Now, if it was just the local band that they put on playing on their own, a lot fewer people will turn up. And if you're not in that circle at all, then no one will turn up. So yeah. It's very difficult to get anything kind of grassroots going if you're not in with the in people, if you see what I mean.
I don't think we're too bad. You almost go to most touring bands' gigs in Liverpool to watch the local band. Mm-hmm. Like, just, for example, Mugstar, who are just ridiculously, they've settled what they do. Like, they still did down so well. You could just go and watch them play before a main band and absolutely annihilate them.
Mm-hmm.
And the band just don't know what to do. Following them, it's just like, everyone's came to see what he wanted to see.
Yeah, you see, again, it's really, again, it's reminding me, again, the whole Dundee thing. It was, you know, it sounds very much like my experience up there was that audience would go to see the local band and the promoters would pick local bands to pull people in for the headline act.
Yeah, there's very much a sense of that.
Yeah, and it's, I think that's good. I think when the local band's got the power, that is really good.
It's who you need, bringing in some more bands that connect different people outside as well to try and bring them in, which is why there's so many seemingly like weirdly mixed bills in order to try and get a bit of every pocket to turn up.
And I think that's a really healthy thing. I think mixed bills are a fantastic idea. I think it's very harmful just to have a bill where it's all metal bands or all indie bands or all electronica. I think mixing it up, I think my perfect bill would be, you know, a folk act, some kind of heavy noise act, maybe a spoken word act and a DJ or something like that, and it to be accepted by the audience. Because then it's interesting. And nobody playing for more than 25 minutes as well.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Hello.
Short attention span.
I do that band, the Royal Bastard Power Smoon Orchestra of Liverpool, which is purely based on playing for too long.
Was that the one? Now, this is the one I was reading about, the one that you did the 40-minute set while climbing a stepladder, according to your website.
Yeah, but now we do. I think we hit 2 hours. I think we managed to do 2 hours of one riff with... There was a lot of people, two drummers, two bassists, eight guitarists, just playing one riff for 2 hours apart from at one point in the middle when the power went and me and the other bassist ran around what used to be his venue trying to get the power back on while the drums just kept it up and people played electric guitars acoustically.
Nice.
Until we got the power back on and ran back on.
And how many people were in the audience for the duration?
Not as many as was in the band. I've got a friend who instantly, like the first time we did it, just watched a bit, went outside, came back in, figured it out, went back outside again and just came up afterwards going, I figured out what you were doing, so I just took no part in it.
So he'd worked out he'd kind of extrapolated what the entire show was going to be like.
Yeah, based on me being an idiot.
Well, let's have a look at some of the other bands then, because we've had a quick look at Monobrow and... do you say it's now the Royal Bastards Power Swimming Orchestra?
Of Liverpool, yeah.
Of Liverpool. And you see, so you've added Royal and of Liverpool compared to...
I don't know when and why, but it happened.
Because you're too legit to quit.
I like taking up too much room on gig five.
But that's a good thing.
And given I draw them all, it just means more letters to draw.
Yeah.
It's irritating.
So you're also in trouble with books, which is, from going through everything today, is probably the most kind of opposite end of the spectrum from the noisy stuff. It seems to be more kind of melancholy, folky.
Yeah, but it does have its noisy element.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more like it was. Yeah, it's more like a test to see if I can hold back long enough. Like, it's to teach me how to do what I do better in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Within my head, of just going, right, I can't just slam 6 distortion pedals on. I've got to hold back.
And then we've got Spirit Animals, who I have to say, fantastic website. It's a big fan of the side-scrolling website.
People hate that website. I hate changing that website because I'm so crap at it, and I still do everything in Notepad in pure HTML, mm-hmm. and bits copied and pasted off the internet. It's really hard to find where the information is to change it. So that website probably still advertises a gig that was 12 months ago-ish. But I've had no reason to change it because I haven't played the gig, so...
Actually, I know the thing about it that also appealed to me was the huge lettering across it. I'm a big fan of that. But we'll come to all that, I guess, when we start looking at your actual art side of things. Double Happiness. I've just got the word mystery written next to that one.
Haven't actually played a gig yet. I'm trying to think if we even practiced.
Yeah, because even trying Googling it brings up nothing useful. But it does have a lot of pictures of Big Muffs on your website.
That was a pile that I was meant to fix of a friend who just goes through them in 6 month bursts. And slowly then just lending them bits and pieces to take over from the pile of broken Big Muffs.
Yeah, my youngest son has my American Big Muff, and he seems to, from what I'm hearing, he seems to have managed to break that. I've got a Russian one that's, God, when did I buy it? I bought it in my early 20s, so it was about 20 years old. That's still going strong. Still my favourite distortion pedal of all time. Fantastic thing. Next on the list, though, was Plectrum the Band. Again, I couldn't find anything.
Plectrum the Band started off as just my friend Joe doing solo gigs as Plectrum, where I helped them build giant cardboard Plectrum suit for them to then just like punch some guitars on stands that were tuned at different intervals and tape down keys on synthesizers and old keyboards, which then slowly turned into one performance by what we announced to be the last gig by a famous American, like, really cool band, Plectrum the Band, and convinced, like, the people in the venue and everything that it was this bunch of American fellas coming over to just play this last gig with a website that had quotes from Flicks of Vargeld and Kim Deal about how great we were back in whenever it was. And then it was just a sheer sign of idiocy because a man dressed as a giant plectrum, a man dressed as a bin, me dressed as a crucifix, and a man dressed as a coffin. And a lot of smoke machine and strobe. But somehow we managed to get through that gig and film that, as well as loads of sound bites, to eventually put together a documentary still pertaining to the band being real. But it's one of those things that just fell by the wayside.
Does the documentary sit unfinished on various hard drives?
Just the one. Although I don't know if he's even got it anymore. I should really ask him.
Yeah, I'd like to see that, I have to say. Googling Plectrum the Band brought up a band from Bhopal who were called Plectrum the Band.
Actually with the band as well?
Yeah, yeah. They're called Plectrum. They don't have the colon, but they're called Plectrum the Band.
Oh, that's. I'm glad someone's keeping on to our sting.
Yeah, man. I think they're they obviously inspired by that show.
Yeah, it was a good show. Like, apart from me, I had to put the cardboard crucifix on in the upstairs of the venue it was in. And then because it was so wide, I had to walk down the like rattly stairs with me bass strapped on me sideways. And we were all coming out at like 30-second intervals so you could hear what our part in it pertained to. And yeah, I nearly fell down the stairs of the venue.
I'm hoping your arms weren't in the crucifix kind of outward bits, were they? Or did you have little holes for your arms?
Yeah, it was kind of like if you treat the cross bit as shoulder pads and an eye hole in the upper.
Nice. And then there's, I mean, I'm aware we could probably go on all evening going through all these bands. The other thing you do is art.
Yeah.
And that, would you say that that is more your main thing, or would you say that is just as much a main thing as the music side?
I think this year I've done more music, but I don't, it's probably more to do with not having a computer.
Mm-hmm.
I've broke a laptop and I've tended to sway, and also getting a half decent practice room was nice, just having somewhere to play. So it depends really on what's more available to me.
So I'd say that your artwork then, it's very bold. One of the things I really liked about it was lots of kind of flat colour in it. Seems to be a lot of skulls in there. And again, that's at the Wars Draws website. Like you said before, you do a lot of gig posters.
Yeah, that tends to be what I'm asked to do most. At least.
And do you find yourself with each time they ask you to try and do something you've not done before?
Yeah, I suppose. You can't, yeah. Apart from the fact that the fonts are pretty universal for that.
But then it's, I mean, I'm guessing it's your handwriting, isn't it, effectively? So
yeah.
You're hand lettering everything, so it's going to have that that element to it. But I mean, looking through them, and I'm just scrolling down them, you know, the lettering you choose, there's a difference for each one. There seems to be quite regular Star Wars imagery in there.
That wasn't my choice.
Ah, were they asking you for that?
Yeah, that was the move of I Am Your Father. They wanted Star Wars related, so I tried to do Star Wars related that amused me in making it look crap by having... What's his name? The red fella?
Oh, you got...
Darth Maul in a bath.
Yeah.
With pretty flowers.
Yeah.
And on the wall. And Darth, the other one.
Vader, sitting watching
the telly, yeah.
Pink slippers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was just my way of knowingly putting two fingers up to Star Wars imagery.
And I noticed on that particular one... the band that have gone on to become quite well known, X Easter Island Head, bottom of the bill on that one.
Jesus. Who else was on that bill? Just out of interest.
Home Life, Sing for Your Supper, Trouble with Books, and X Easter Island Head.
I remember that gig, roughly.
Now, I always kind of like looking at things like that. I like looking at posters for shows. And the ones I really like are the ones where somebody has gone on to become really well known. Like right at the bottom in tiny letters. And you think, once they were bottom of the bill. once they were the ones that were being told that they couldn't use the other people's amps.
X Easter Island kind of done well.
They have. They're quite good. I mean, they're slightly kind of Glenn Branker-ish, I think. But, you know, somebody has to be. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. I bought their album. It's not bad.
I've got them all here.
Excellent. What, the band? Or the?
Oh, no.
You've not got them all, like, you know, in plastic bags, really?
It's only three of them now. It's not too bad.
No. And then you did artwork for the Mind Rocker pedal.
Yeah, for the Ghost Effect.
Yeah, now I was going to ask about this. Did you get a copy of it? Did you get one?
Yeah, I've got a bright pink one.
Excellent, because I was wondering, because I thought, you know, so often I just get asked to do these things. They send off the artwork and then never hear anything ever again.
Oh, no. I'm vaguely in touch with Ian.
So it looks really good.
Yeah, it was quite a nice thing from years of doing music-related artwork to making a musical artwork.
Yeah. It looks fantastic. Yeah. I have to say, I do like that. And what else have we got here? I'm just having a quick look more around the gallery here. There's various things. The food and the food ones. The fucking sandwich.
Yeah, I just quite like eat. I can't explain that more than being a fan of food. I did eat that fucking sandwich. Oh, it was disgusting. It was the first and last time I had spam fritter.
Right. A spam fritter is not good.
Oh, it's slimy, horrible.
And I like the kind of isometric pattern made with, or geometric pattern, I should say, made with pizza boxes.
Yeah, I can't remember who that was for. But no, I'm glad I got a pizza artwork in there before it took off.
Yeah, you're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Yeah, it was surfing that Macaulay Culkin spotted that and went, "Hey, Pizza Underground."
Oh, if Macaulay Culkin wants to buy it to use his album out there,
you should drop
give
him
me a call. Like, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he's a regular listener, maybe, possibly. So, when it comes, I mean, because as I say, you've got this kind of quite kind of bold style with the art. Has that just something that's just developed over time, or is that how you've always just drawn?
At least from when I remember drawing, it's always been, yeah, I like comic books and all that. Like, I did A-level art, and that kind of tried to force me towards painting, and I just barely didn't get on with it.
Uh-huh.
And I think I ended up not drawing for ages, and then when I came back to it, I'd lost a lot of skill, which I like, because, yeah, that's the kind of art. I like vaguely crafty lines and artwork in general, so it was nice to have found that in myself.
So yeah, because I mean, I know from my experience of doing A-level art that they really do try and push you in a certain kind of direction. And I found that then when I did my foundation course and when I went to art college, they were kind of very much, you must do this, you must not do this. You know, the attitude that they had, that they said that biro wasn't a valid medium for art and other shit like that. Which, if you're anything like me, made me just want to use biro as my main medium. I used to do this thing where I would keep two pieces going at all times. I had this big canvas, which was of a picture of a kind of a slacker kind of Evan Dando type cartoon figure and his dog thumbing a lift to Alaska. And I would then also be doing all this kind of stuff that they liked. And every time the art lecturers got too crazy about the stuff that they liked, I'd go back and do the slacker thing that they hated for a couple of weeks.
Oh, when I went to senior school, they actually have bell tips in the classrooms. So I think I was quite bummed out for them before that you couldn't just hand-fistedly colour black line drawings in. Like, that was an unacceptable level of art.
Yeah.
Like, I want bell tips. Like, that's fine.
Well, it's. I think maybe since people have become more used to using computers, as you know, in their art, and being able to have really nicely uniform areas of colour, and then printing from that, I think it's maybe become more acceptable for that kind of art to be. It's crept more into the mainstream now, I think.
Yeah, I think the only way I justify myself in doing that is because I pretty much exclusively use the paint program, the really basic one, to do all that artwork. Like, I haven't got Photoshop or anything. Just got a pen and a copy of paint.
So you just start. So that does bring me to another question. So when you sit down, do you do a sketch of it first and then basically just reproduce it in paint? Or
draw on paper, scan it, and then just colour box fill on paint.
Right.
like a child.
So you tied it all up and fill it, basically.
Yeah, just fill the tiny gaps that are missing in bit, and then drop pulling it.
But there's nothing wrong with that. And the thing is, as well, you're saying that, you know, like a child, but the thing with paint is that is now being seen as a legitimate source. I bet you could go back to art college now.
And use paint?
Yeah.
I bet you could. I failed A-level the first time around, but probably failing. There's even more distractions now from writing an essay about who's inspired my artwork.
Oh, you see, I hated that side of it. I really hated that side of it.
I had nothing to say whatsoever.
Yeah. It was when they'd be asking me to write about this person or that person, I'd just be like, well, I don't care about that person. I had no interest in art history at all. I used to sit in the art history lectures kind of almost dozing off. I just didn't give a fuck about it. It was just so uninteresting. It sounds to me that you're in a similar state of mind about it.
I think I was really blessed that I didn't manage to scrape through. That wasn't an option for me, so I just had to get on with it in my own way.
But yeah, it's painful. I think some people could have been interested in art history for, I've no idea why, but some people appear to be. It's not like learning normal history. It's not like sort of saying, okay, well, we can learn the mistakes of, you know, early 20th century Austria and avoid a war. With art, it doesn't matter. And, you know, it's not like you're kind of avoiding the mistakes of the past by reading about them. Your art should be about the blank slate each time. It should be, obviously my point of view, I think, and people could feel free to contradict me and to say, no, that's wrong, or, you know, come up with a contrary opinion. But I think that art should be more about the individual and what that individual, who is a unique individual in the entire history of time, what that person has to express from their unique brain and their unique physiology.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Because there'll never be another version of you. There'll be people who are similar to greater and lesser degrees, but there will not be in the entire universe for the entire remaining history of time. There will not be an exact kind of combination of atoms that form you again. So I don't know why colleges and schools have this attitude that we need to make each generation of artists copy what previous generations did.
Yeah, just giving the stuff to figure out where they sit.
Yeah.
A lot of it. You're obviously going to gravitate towards the things that you like.
So yes.
Just give them the shit to look through.
Yeah, because you could look through it and you could go, okay, I like that. How did that person make that work? You know, I think you can learn from other artists in forms of technique, and I have no problem with that at all. You know, art classes teaching how things can be done and how to make something done more easily. It's like, you know, sitting drawing hands. Hands are hard. So get people to, you know, you can learn how to draw hands. But if somebody's not interested in drawing hands, then that's fine. You know, the best advice I ever gave people, he said modestly sounding, I just hadn't realised how arrogant that sounded, but the advice I always used to give to people when they were saying, well, how do you do art? And I was just like, well, you just copy what you see.
Yeah.
And it's right there in front of you, just do that, just do what's there. And I think part of the thing is, though, with artists is that they're quite good at translating a three-dimensional space into two dimensions. Maybe that's where people have problems that haven't got that experience.
I know, but people I'm always really jealous of people who bad at art. If you get I regularly do stupid little art drawing competitions against that apprentice in work just because his drawings are fantastically shit. Like, amazingly shit.
Yeah.
Just, like, I wish I could be that hand-fisted, but I'd just be faking it. But to genuinely put all your effort in and to come out with that's fantastic.
The whole notion of the this is the work and it's still not any good, but it is good because it's not good.
It's, yeah, like the rubbish things are great. Like, I don't, not that I rate myself as being brilliant, like, the thing I like about the things I do is that they're all a bit chunky.
There's a nice kind of, with your work, there's a nice kind of lack of interest in doing it the, and it's difficult to try and word this in a way that doesn't sound, it's one of these, it's a tricky thing to do, because I think it all looks exactly right, but I think from a kind of outside view of it, some people might look at it and go, oh, well, that bit's slightly wrong, and why, like, with the guitarist with facing the big amp, you know, so people might look at that and go, well, why does the lightning turn into kind of brown halfway through itself and stuff? Whereas to me, that makes perfect sense why you've done that. It's because it's going across another line, so it's into a different area, so you fill it with a different colour, which is obvious. But I can imagine other people going, oh, why is it like that? And I think there's that nice kind of not giving a fuck element about it. You're kind of saying, this is what I do, and I'm not making any excuses for it, so this is how it's going to be.
Yeah, I've always done it so that I can definitely spell a mistake, I'll just scribble them out and carry on, yeah, and keep them, because that was, like, I don't want to draw a whole poster out again, because I spelled Liverpool wrong,
yeah,
or something like that. I'll make it work in the space that's left. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, it's one of the few things that I ever took from something that Neil Young said as being actually, you know, worth listening to. Because mostly I find him to be reactionary and a bit kind of a past it and out of touch, fuddy-duddy. But he did once say that, regarding playing music, that if you play the wrong note once, don't pretend you didn't and then just kind of quickly try and fix it. Just play it again and again and again until it's the right note.
I'm definitely in that school of things.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with art, exactly the same. If you make a mistake, you just do it again, and you just repeat the mistake until you say, that's deliberate.
Yeah, Jordan noise sets when you suddenly just get a burst of complete silence that you don't know where it's from. It's like the second you get that back on, you know you need to go back to it.
Yeah.
To prove that you meant to do it in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this, I mean, the way I kind of do art and music is that I will let those little accidents dictate where it's going to go.
You can't not.
Yeah.
Like, you've surely lost your sense of, like, blind forward motion. You just ignore what happened, yeah, the truth of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you absolutely have to just say, you have to embrace the mistakes. You have to, it's reached a point for me where if a mistake happens, instead of going, oh, fuck, I've made a mistake, it's, I can go, okay, so this has opened up a new avenue that maybe I hadn't thought of. Something's happened here that I wouldn't have done consciously. So where can I now allow this thing to take me? You know, it's like the time when, you know, you might be sitting programming a beat in a piece of software and you hit quantize, which I rarely do, but occasionally, you know, you go, oh, I'll try to see what happens to that. Hit quantize, it moves the beat and completely fucks it. And you go, oh, it sounds really wonky now. And you go, you know, I'm just going to leave it. I'm not going to undo what I've just done.
Yeah. Wonky's better anyway,
man. Yeah.
I've always been a fan of wonky.
Yeah, wonky's good. So, we're coming up on the hour, so we should draw things to a close. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you really wanted to mention that we haven't mentioned?
Not sure. I struggle to remember my own things that I do.
Well, I'll say you've got the Twitter account, which I will link to as well. There's pretty much all the information on the world that's, you know, slightly out of date on your website.
I really need to update that.
Do you have a Facebook presence?
No, I deleted it a few years ago when I first thought it was going a bit shit. But now I just quite enjoy being one of the few people who abandoned it and didn't go back.
Well, you're ahead of the curve because I think people are starting to... Yeah, it's on its downward slope now.
You can hope, because then at least people have to do things like fly a gig again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of just the go to a gig on the event where you put the event up on Facebook, 100 people say they'll go, 4 people turn up.
Well, at least now, like, you can see a Facebook event if you're not on Facebook, as long as it's the correct kind of link to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas there was at one point a couple of years ago where you just couldn't see anything. You wouldn't know if there was a gig on. People would go, there's a gig on. And you'd be linked to a login page. And it was just like, well, that makes the website even more useless.
Yeah. You'd have the thing that would come up and say, like, John is on Facebook to connect with him. He'd be like, no, I just want to see what this event is. I want the address of the fucking venue.
I know John, I know where he lives. Yeah. Liverpool's tiny. Just tell me where this gig is.
Yeah.
Tell me what date it's on. I don't know anything.
I'm already connected to John, damn it. He's sitting in the room with me.
I suppose it's just text John.
Yeah.
the mythical John.
And this is the thing, I mean, it ruins it for Facebook because everybody's ringing John and they're not going to the Facebook page. And Facebook are going, why does nobody ever look at John's events? I'm going to put these lower down the ranking so nobody sees them. And then John goes, why is nobody looking at my events? And everybody just rings me.
Oh, no, but everyone's on Facebook, so rarely I'm the miserable.
You're the odd one out. But everybody's now moving to G+.
Is that a thing?
Google Plus is a thing. It's and the way they've done it is they kind of basically forced everybody with a YouTube account to have a Google Plus account. And that's how they did it. But it's growing. I'm finding myself using Google Plus more and more. And a lot more people I know are on it. But then it's Google. But then Google aren't maybe as evil as, you know, some of them could be. Anybody that hires Ray Kurzweil has to be okay. So... Yeah, the man who wants to make us all technologically immortal. So, yeah, I think that's good. The man who thinks that the computer singularity, the technological singularity, could be with us in the next 20-odd years. You've got to like that. Yeah, he thinks that the world could be vastly improved in ways we can't even imagine yet. So,
that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, he thinks that... Well, he's described it as being that once the singularity happens... The difference between the way things will be after it and the way things are now will be greater than the difference between Stone Age man and us today.
Well, part of me really wants to go back to the day before computers and the internet and just live in a cave where I need gig flyers. And the only way to tell people to go to something is... by telling them to go to something.
So they're so in the cave dwelling utopia you imagine there are still gigs.
Yeah, definitely.
Excellent.
Yeah, some version of that anyway. Like,
so you're looking for a kind of retro futurist where you're allowed to have gigs, but the cave is good.
Nah, not so much the cave. I think it's just because I still remember life before the internet. When you used to knock at your mate's door and ask them if they were coming out.
Yeah.
And I've got a really bad case of nostalgia for that thing of just going, I'm just going to walk around, and if he's not in, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, the whole, you go around and the door opens. Hi, Mrs. John. Is John coming out to play? Oh, John's not in, I'm afraid. He's gone to Scouts. Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, there's definitely more adventure in there than signing in on Facebook and Facebook chatting.
You're absolutely right. And I think on that bombshell, we should draw things to a close. Sean, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I'm hoping that... Well, I will tell listeners, go to the website. Go and look at the art. Sean, while I was talking to you, I was looking at the gift shop on your store. There's nothing to buy.
Oh, yeah. It's when I ran out of the 2 batches of stickers. I'll put it on the list.
Because I was going to buy some stickers while we were talking. And then I was like, stickers, great. And I was like, sold out. And then part of me was like, well, that's good, but also not good for me.
Yeah, I think I'm meant to design the third pack about 18 months ago or something ridiculous, but yeah, I'll add it to the list with the 46 bands and 9 gig posters and the attempt at scenes and all the other things that I promised myself I'm going to do.
And are you open to people commissioning you for work?
Yeah, that's easier because they give me deadlines.
And when you've got a deadline, you're better.
Oh yeah, I'm brilliant at a deadline. But
you see, that's where you beat me, because when I'm given a deadline, I just go, you know what, I can't do it at all.
Oh, that, no, a deadline's lovely. Like, even if it means it's just like last minute's fine, because it only takes you as long to do something as it takes. So I can do that.
Is that something?
Not that everything I do is really last minute shit. Just putting that out there.
No. Well, it's all, there's nothing bad at all on your website. So, you know, go along and look at it, listeners, and commission Sean to do work for you, because it's good. And, you know, more artists need to get paid for stuff. So,
Definitely. Yeah, I'm on that.
And I'm guessing your rates will be reasonable.
Yeah, very reasonable.
There you go. Reasonable rates and good quality work, which is what you want. So Sean, yeah, all that's left to say then, I think, is the traditional Future Library goodbye, as we come in almost bang on the hour. Listeners, thanks for listening. And I hope you've enjoyed the new theme tune, if it was a new theme tune. I hope you've enjoyed the old theme tune, if it was the old theme tune. It might be a new theme tune next week, if it isn't already. Anyway, thanks for listening, and goodbye. Bye-bye. Thank you for downloading this episode of Future Library. Future Library is brought to you by PetPiranha.com and is hosted by myself, Alex Bottom. The podcast is free, but if you do want to show your appreciation, feel free to go along to alexbottom.co.uk and click through to music, where you'll be able to find things that you can buy, or go to asmallglassghost.co.uk where you can buy my latest music. Episodes come out when I feel like it, mostly weekly. But that's it, so thank you for listening.